Right, so welcome back, everybody. As you notice, I'm speaking English now, and there's a reason for that, because we have a very special guest speaker with us today from the United States, and his name is Quentin Vennie. So before I ask him anything, of course, I would like to introduce Quentin, because Quentin is a person that I invited to be with us here at Devoted after Instagram Live. So as we all know, a lot is happening in the world today, especially the last couple of months, but also the last couple of weeks. There has been a tremendous change coming up for us to acknowledge that racism exists. Unfortunately, we do have to tell people again and again, Black Lives Matter, and that is something that is happening in the world right now. And in the midst of all these things going on, I was on Instagram and I saw an Instagram TV with Quentin, and he was guiding a meditation there. And I saw Quentin and I was so touched. I told him, you touched my heart with this, because he was so raw and pure with his emotion and his presence. So I contacted him through the DM, and I saw about his work, and I will tell you a little bit about his work. So his name is Quentin Vennie. You can see him already. Welcome, Quentin. And I will just introduce you through the text on your website, and you can add everything you want after this. So his name is Quentin Vennie. He is a celebrated wellness expert, motivational speaker, and author of the best-selling memoir, Strong in the Broken Places. His work has been featured in the Huffington Post, Thrive Global, Entrepreneur, Fox News, MindBody Green, and others. Quentin has been recognized as one of Black Enterprise Magazine's 100 Modern Men of Distinction and by the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention for his contribution in raising awareness for mental health and suicide prevention, as well as appearing as the wellness keynote speaker for Colin Kaepernick's Know My Rights Camp. Quentin works with youth in under-resourced communities, helping them understand their traumas and turn them into triumphs, and spearheads initiatives that make yoga and mindfulness accessible among communities and populations that don't ordinarily have access to them. So, Quentin, I found you through the mysteries of the internet, and I'm so happy that I got to know you. You work in the wellness area, you guide meditations as I do, and you help youth that don't easily get access to the things that you offer, and help them with mental illness, suicide prevention, meditation. You are a gardener and a father. I heard that as well. And I'm so happy that you are here. And the reason why I invited you is because I think that there is so much wisdom in maybe also that line in your bio that says that you can triumph through your pain. And that is something I know that you have lived and that you are passing on to the new generations. So first of all, is there anything that you would like to add and tell us about you?
No, I think you covered it all. I'm grateful, honored, and privileged to be here, to be in communion, in community with you all, and having this dialogue. So thank you for reaching out, and thank you for allowing this space, moment, and opportunity.
Thank you so much for being here. I know that there's a lot of things going on in your country, even more intense than we are experiencing right now. I know you are doing a lot of work, because people are reaching out to you and finding you and want to amplify your voice in their platforms as well. So you're doing a lot. I just want to know, how are you?
That's a complicated question. I think how I'm doing changes from moment to moment, from day to day. You know, as you mentioned, you know, because of everything that's happening in our country, in my country, with the protests, with the uprising, you know, I just think we're collectively in a place of pain. We're in a place of discontent, and we're forcing change. And, you know, as everybody knows, you know, change is not a comfortable thing, right? So we're experiencing a lot of discomfort and a lot of pain. So how I feel hopeful some days, and I feel hopeless some days. You know, I feel inspired, you know, 1 minute and then uninspired the next, right? So I'm going through a roller coaster of emotions pretty much on a day-to-day basis. So, you know, my family, my wife, my kids, my garden, those things are what keep me grounded.
Yeah, I understand. I can imagine. And so for you at this moment, what do you feel most passionate about in sharing? What do you think is most important for people to realize in these times?
I think the message that Black Lives Matter is of vital importance, especially in the United States. You know, since Black people were brought into America on ships unwillingly, right, and forced to endure, you know, years and years of slavery, you know, things in this country for Black people have not been well. We have not been given the same economic resources, educational resources. You know, the value of our human life isn't even the same as our counterparts. You know, for a long period of time, you know, we were considered to be 3/5 of a human, you know, in the mindset of the popular culture, of dominant culture in America. So I think right now, you know, understanding that the life of Black people, the life of melanated people, it matters, and it's of no lesser value than anybody else's life. You know, in our country, years ago, like a hunter had killed a lion, you know, in the jungles of Africa or something, and you know, people were like in an uproar about that. You know, they wanted like this man's hunting license revoked. They wanted jail time for this man. Yet in this country, police officers can kill a Black person, and it takes going through social media and protests just to get an arrest, right? Like the arrest is the first thing, and it's like we feel like we've won, you know, by just getting the arrest, but that's when the work just begins, right? Because now we have to fight for conviction. And we see time and time again, you know, that police have the ability to murder Black kids, Black women, and get away with it. You know, they aren't held accountable. We see that in Mike Brown. We saw that in Trayvon Martin. You know, I'm from Baltimore, which is a city in the state of Maryland. And we had a protest in 2015 for the death of Freddie Gray. You know, his neck was his spinal cord was more than 75% severed while he was in police custody. You know, and the people and the officers that were responsible for that were never held accountable. They were arrested and never convicted. You know, they were acquitted. So, you know, I think we're at a really intriguing point right now, because I think for the first time in a long time, I think people are starting to wake up to their privilege. And I think that people are starting to wake up and see, especially with the invention of social media and camera phones, it's pervasive, and it's plastered on every social media feed and every news feed in this country. There's no way to deny what's happening to Black and Brown people in this country. And, you know, so we're at a really interesting time right now.
Yeah, we are. And a lot is coming up, and I feel like it's so important also to be fully aware of the pain, the trauma, the injustice, and how this has been going on for years and years and years and years. So do you feel like there is hope, or does the anger need more space first? How does this correlate for you? How do you look at that?
I mean, I think the interesting thing is, you know, anger is usually one of those emotions that as soon as we as human beings experience it, we try to shut it down. We try to demonize it. We try to make it something that's just so god awful. We never really provide space for anger to exist. Now, anger in itself is not a negative emotion. How we expose it, how we express it, right, is usually what triggers the negative response. If we provide an opportunity for anger to exist, for that emotion to just come out, then we provide the space and opportunity for dialogue, for growth, for healing, for understanding, you know? So
yeah.
We can't shut down our emotions and act as if they don't exist. We have to allow them to exist. We have to give them permission to exist, because in doing that, we give ourselves permission to be human. And as Black people in this country, that's what we wanted to be seen as all along. Like, that we're not property, that we're not of lesser value, that we are human, right? And the same air that we need to breathe, you do too. The same, you know, blood that pumps through your veins pumps through ours. The same pain that you feel, we feel. The same desires for our lives and our families that everyone else feels, we feel the same thing, right? So it's really the greatest difference, you know, is our skin color and how we're treated as a result of it, right? But if that were never an issue, we would have more similarities than we do differences. And I think that's what we need to come back to.
Yeah. Oh, I feel you. So what are the ways that you are supporting yourself through this transition or this time that you are in right now and that the country is in right now?
It's I'm challenged because usually when I'm engulfed, I mean, I'm a natural, like, introverted, reclusive person. But when I'm engulfed in something that I'm very passionate about, it's really challenging for me to really take a step back. You know, it's challenging, to move away from my own self-care. You know, so what I've been forced to do recently, I mean, just at the constant encouragement of my wife and of my family and my friends and, you know, people on social media, like, reminding me to take a break. It's like, you need to take a break because we need you. All right. And I believe that we can never bless anyone else from an empty well. You know, if we do that, then, you know, we're not giving all to whatever it is that we're fighting for. So for me, just taking a step aside, you know, stepping into my garden, being back in nature, being a part of the earth, you know, and using that time to be meditative, you know, using that time to be self-reflective, to understand the state that we're currently in, and figure out what I can do to help channel that and change it. You know, so between gardening and writing, you know, really just expressing myself creatively via social media and other platforms, has been a bit therapeutic for me.
Yeah, I can understand how that works. And then for you talked about anger, which I feel like, oh, this is such, we could talk probably for hours about, right? About anger and how it makes us human and how important it is to acknowledge other people's anger and our own anger and to transform that. And then there's also the topic of pain. I know that is something that you are passionate about, that you had your own challenges in. What would be your message if it comes to pain in these times and how to deal with pain in a, like, yeah, productive way, so to say?
I think the first thing is really understanding where that pain stems from, right? Like, where does the pain stem from? How is it impacting your life and how is it impacting the lives of others? I think, you know, having the ability to go inward and be a bit introspective, I think is vital and of extreme importance. You know, and being violent and aggressive, it may get the anger out, but it doesn't change the reason why you're angry, you know? And I've learned that myself, right? Like, I've gotten angry and I've punched the wall and then I've broken my hand. And now, granted, I don't feel angry anymore, but now I have a broken hand, right? So it's like, what did I really accomplish with that, right? But if I would have taken a step back and allowed myself to really see what I was angry about, right, then I could have figured out what I needed to do to really shift, and instead of counteracting my anger, addressing it, right, and addressing it in a way that provides an actionable solution and resolution to whatever it is I'm angry about, right? So I think, you know, anger is one of those emotions that if not, you know, if you're not willing to be introspective, then it could be looked at as a negative, right? But if we're willing to really identify and understand the root cause of anger and pain, right, then I think we have the ability, the unique ability as human beings to really push beyond it, right, and challenge and change the things that are creating that emotion in the first place. You know, pain is something that's going to exist. I firmly believe that, you know, our reaction to pain does not change the fact that it exists. Our reaction to it determines the impact that it has in our lives. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how we respond, we can't control what happens to us. We can't control what other people believe, but we can control what we choose to believe and how we choose to respond and act to it, right? And so we have to hold ourselves accountable, you know, in moments of pain, discomfort, and displeasure.
Yeah. So I saw you on the IGTV and you talked about the pain that you are feeling or you were feeling at that moment with everything that is happening and with the killings of the Black people that are now being looked at because it was on film, or now is the time we say this, we cannot ignore this anymore. And what really touched me is how I don't know if this is the right word, but how like profound or beautiful it is to really see the pain and feel the pain. Like it can also be so liberating to really feel it. I saw you were feeling your pain and expressing it, but by you doing so, it changed something in me as well. Mm. It opened my heart. And that is not something that you hear a lot, right? That like looking at the pain and being with the pain can be a liberating, transformative experience. Yeah. How do you relate to your pain in this moment? How does it work for you now?
I think that the IG live that you saw was with a friend of mine, Robin.
You could, yeah,
and
yes.
You know, that was Breonna Taylor's birthday.
Yes.
You know, Breonna Taylor, for those that don't know, was, you know, in her home, and you know, police said they were executing a search warrant, you know, and they killed her in her own home, right? Like, we often look at the place that we live and reside as our safe place. You know, and come to find out they were executing a warrant on the wrong place. You know, it was based off of a relationship that they claimed she had and she didn't. You know, so she lost her life literally senselessly while just sleeping in her own home. You know, when I was growing up, I was told that I wouldn't live past 18 or 21. I was told I would never graduate from high school, was told that I'd be a failure. You know, my father was addicted to drugs, you know, most of my life. So I was told that I would be like him, you know, and for me, I'm over 30. And the unfortunate part and what was heartbreaking for me was the fact that she didn't get that opportunity. You know, we celebrated her. She died a month shy of her 27th birthday. You know, not died, but was senselessly murdered. And we're forced to celebrate her life that she didn't even get a chance to really experience, you know. Yeah. And that's heartbreaking, you know, because I have a sister named Breonna, you know. And she's a college student. What if she was just at home, you know, after a day, you know, of being in school? She's a photographer, she's a creative. You know, what if that was her, right? Like, I see myself and my family in everyone that looks like us, everyone that shares the same complexion, everyone that shares the same experience, because, you know, we are one, right? So, then, you know, growing up as a male, as a Black male, you know, you're taught to be ultra masculine. You're taught to be, you know, that vulnerability is weakness. That you can't cry, that you can't be emotional. And, you know, for a long time, I adopted that reality. And that became who I was. I was very cold. I was very numb to, I've seen more people die than graduate from college. You know, you know, I became really numb to the human experience. Because that's what I was told I needed to be. And growing up in a city like Baltimore, which has, for the past 20 years, been in the top 5 most dangerous cities in America, And coming from that place, you know, you learn to deal with things a little bit differently. Certain things don't impact you in the same way. But as a father, as a husband, you know, as someone that's raising the next generation of freedom fighters, I realize that vulnerability is not weakness, but it is strength, you know, and it takes a person to be truly comfortable in who they are and what they believe and what they feel to express that level of vulnerability. And for me, I'm no longer afraid to be vulnerable. I'm no longer afraid to express how I feel. You know, people can judge me and view me and say whatever they want to me. At the end of the day, I take care of my family. I protect my family. I take care of my household. I take care of my kids. And I can't say that about everybody, you know? So what's more masculine than that?
Truth. Ilko, do you have a question for Quentin?
Yes. So thank you for sharing. What, like, this is really strange times, but what I find hopeful is that what we see here in Holland, but also all around the world, is that it's just one of our biggest frustrations, and we spoke about this many times, is whenever the topic like this arises, it's oftentimes the Black people who have to defend themselves. And it's not the white people who step up and speak out. And we obviously have, I don't know if you know about it, probably you do, but we have the Black Pete issue here in Holland. Every December we have a anniversary, and we have Black Pete, who is like, it's just a really a bad thing. And we spoke about this many times, and it's on social media. It's always the Black people who are stepping up, and it's never the white people. It's almost never the white people who are stepping up. And a big difference that I see now is that, a lot of white people are stepping up as well. But I also feel and know that it's tough and complex for white people sometimes to step up and speak up as well, because it's such a sensitive topic. And I was just wondering, imagine you and I, we were best friends for 10 years, 20 years, whatever. And I was your white best friend, and I never spoke up. I never stepped up. But I would decide today, like, okay, I want to step up. I want to speak up. What would you expect from me? Or maybe what would make you really happy whenever it would come to me as a white man stepping up?
That's a great question. Because you're right. And I think that's very disheartening in a lot of ways. I do have friends that are white, very close friends that are white. And for a very long time, they didn't step up. And now I'm seeing that they have. And I think the first thing I would advise anyone to do is first take a moment of self-reflection, right? And understanding what has been missed for so long and why, right? Like there's no surprise that Black people in America and in other countries are treated differently, you know? And I think taking an opportunity to really ask yourself why, and not only why are they treated differently, but why has it taken me so long to realize that and to want to do something,
right?
And then the second part of that would be to listen and educate, you know? I believe that consistent progressive dialogue is the only way we're going to make it through this. And as a white person, having the willingness to be uncomfortable and to be wrong, it takes a level of humility, right? Normally when race conversations happen, there's a lot of ego and pride that steps in, right? And ego and pride are like, they're the two twins that you know prevent change from happening. You know, if a white person is uncomfortable talking about race, imagine how a Black person feels experiencing racism. You know, so I think there needs to be a level of humility and understanding that 99.9% of what you think you know about Black people is wrong. 99.9% of what you believe of yourself has probably been a lie, right? Because these are the two things that have created such distance and such segregation. You know, my wife is white. You know, I have three daughters who are white. And we have to have these uncomfortable conversations pretty regularly. And it was my wife's willingness to be uncomfortable and to acknowledge that she didn't know what she thought she did, that was able to move us forward, you know? And I think once you've taken a level of self-reflection, once you've allowed yourself to learn to ask the questions, the next step is action, you know? Really questioning and asking, what are you willing to sacrifice to stand in solidarity with the people you claim to support? Are you willing to, what parts of your privilege are you willing to lose and offer up in order to up-level other people who've been oppressed? I think often it's easy to stand in allyship. And I use air quotes when I say that, right? Because anyone can, you know, can write a Black Lives Matter post on social media or go out and hold up a sign, right? But when the police are coming, you know, and they're attacking these Black folks, are you standing with them? Are you protecting them? Are you willing to sacrifice your freedom for their freedom? You know, if you own a business or a corporation, right, are you willing to, you know, let go of $100,000 of your salary in order to create a position or open up a position or a door of opportunity for someone of color, right? Like, what are you really willing to do? I, you know, we often say that everybody wants to be Black, but nobody wants to be Black, right? So like, everybody wants to listen to the music and dress and wear the clothing and, you know, talk in slang and lingo, right? Like, that's cool. But then when it comes down to being treated like a Black person, that's when everyone wants to retreat and go back to hiding, you know, and living in their privilege. Right. So it's like, you know, racism is not a choice. Racism is a system. Right. And a lot of people, they get offended when myself or anybody else says, no, you're a racist. Right. And the first thing is like, I'm not a racist. What are you talking about? Right. I have a Black friend. I'm dating a Black guy. Like, you know, whatever. It's like, those things don't change the fact that you benefit from a system that oppresses another, right? And because racism is a system, if you're not actively moving toward anti-racism, then you're passively moving in the direction of racism, right? So it's a constant effort. It's you know, anti-racism is action, right? Love is an action word, you know? Anti-racism is an action word. So like, what are you doing and willing to sacrifice in your fight for equity and equality?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Wow, so I feel like we need more time, but what I also feel is how beautiful your words are and how touching your words are for me and probably for the other people in this room at this moment. And how beautiful would it be to just be together in this moment with our truth, guided by you. And we talked about this. I asked you, would you guide a meditation for us? And so we can be together in this space and feel what's being touched inside of us and what wants to come through for the days and the years to come. Because I feel like this is such an important conversation. I stand for it to talk about this more often, to be an ally in many more ways. And I feel like this is a beautiful opportunity for us all to just connect to ourselves and just feel the feels in this moment. So Quentin, is there anything you would like to add or would like to say before we move into the meditation?
No, nothing specific. I mean, I think we covered a lot. All of the questions were very thought-provoking. And progressive, so I'm grateful and appreciative. I'm looking forward to, you know, to breathing together. And I'll do the same meditation that you witnessed is very similar to the meditations that I guide everywhere I go, right? Because I think especially right now, The idea of being intentional is of vital importance, you know, because yeah. even people with the greatest intentions can still cause harm, right? So we have to really understand, what does intentionality mean? You know, people often say, I didn't intend for that to happen, or I didn't mean for that to happen, right? But yeah. but it did, right? So how do we then shift how we identify what our intentions are, and then act on them and execute them better? So, you know, whenever so just find a comfortable seat. I'm a firm believer that meditation doesn't have to look like the Google images, you know, the crisscross applesauce and, you know, the three fingers in the air. You know, just find a place of comfort, you know, whether you're sitting in a chair, you're laying on the sofa, you can lay on the floor, whatever works for you. And just close your eyes for a moment. You know, allow yourself to just be. Understand and recognize that in this moment, the only thing that matters is your humanity, your humanness. If you're holding on to any areas of tension, it could be in your face with a facial expression, it could be your hands, your wrists, your ankles, your shoulders. Just let go. Allow gravity to take over. Allow your body to sink a little deeper. Keep your breathing normal, regular. Notice as your body gently rises with every inhale and how it sinks with every exhale. I want you to think of an intention. It could be anything, but try to make it specific to this very moment. What are you looking to learn, to take away? How are you looking to show up? What are the things that need to be changed? What is your intention? What does that intention look like? What's it feel like? Visualize putting that intention in motion. As you visualize that intention, be sure that it's not causing tension in your body. Let that intention wash over you. Let it become a blanket, comforting, coddling you. We'll take the next few moments and just breathe as we continue to visualize and hold on to that intention. on your own time, I want you to take 3 intentional breaths. Deep inhales through your nose and deep exhales through the mouth. We're breathing that intention into life, knowing that you are supported and grounded in that intention. Deep inhale through the nose. Breathe out your intention. 2 more breaths. Inhale through the nose. Exhale through the mouth. Breathe out your intention. Last one. Inhale through the nose. And exhale through the mouth. Breathing your intention through into the universe. Know that you are exactly where you are supposed to be. Your intention may not change the entire world, but it has the ability to change someone's world. And when you're comfortable, when your body sees fit, slowly blink your eyes open. Take in the world around you. But hold on to this feeling. Hold on to this intention. Let it guide you throughout the rest of the day and the remainder of your week.
Do you want to say something?
Again, thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Quentin, you touched my heart again. You have incredible energy. You're such a force. And you sparked my intention to be a force for good even more powerful, even more brave. So I really get that and I really feel it in my body. I'm so thankful for you being here, being with us, taking your time, your precious energy to support us in this process that we need to go through as white people. And thank you so much for being here. Yeah. Sending
you
so much love from the Netherlands. And I hope we can stay in touch and hope to be able to support you in other ways as well.
I look forward to the same. Thank you so much for the space, the opportunity. Thank you for creating this community and welcoming me into it. I appreciate you all. Thank you to everybody who's watching, who's witnessing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Take care.